Andrew Talks to Chefs is an independent podcast. For current and past episodes, Andrew's blog, contact information, and more, please visit andrewtalkstochefs.com. To support us, please visit patreon.com/andrewtalkstochefs. Enjoy the show.
I'm Massimo Bottura.
This is Amanda Cohen.
This is David Kinch.
This is Mike Anthony.
This is Huni Kim.
This is Amanda Freitag.
This is Richard Blaze.
This is Paul Kahn.
This is Curtis Stein.
This is Stephen Harris.
This is Missy Robbins.
And you're listening to Andrew Talks to Chefs.
The main ingredient. This is the main ingredient. The main ingredient.
What's up, what's up, what's up, everybody? This is the main ingredient with David Nayfeld. I'm your host. This is episode one, and I am joined by Manny J.
What up, world? Hope everyone's having a beautiful and blessed day.
Those are the voices of David Nayfeld and Manny Jimenez, a.k.a. Manny J. They just launched a new podcast this week. It's called The Main Ingredient with David Nayfeld. David is here to discuss it with us on this episode of Andrew Talks to Chefs.
It's gonna take a prolonged arrangement of the senses to make some sense of this.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. This is Andrew Talks to Chefs. I am your host, Andrew Friedman, and I hope you all have endured this week. There's a lot I want to say about where things are in this country, in this world, in this industry right now, but I'm treading water a little today, so I'm going to put all of that on hold until next week, and I want to get right to today's show. If you've been listening to us for a while, then you will remember hearing David Nayfeld, the chef and co-owner of Kefiko and Kefiko Alimentari in San Francisco, California. David is a super talented chef and a straight shooter, and he and I have become pals, mostly through the show, but also visiting in San Francisco and through some time we spent together at the Philly Chef Conference just before the lockdown this spring. Over the past few months, David has really been putting himself out there in a variety of ways, most dramatically in a very well-read piece that he wrote for Business Insider, outlining what needs to happen and what we now refer to as the industry reset. Well, now, in what I think was an inevitable development, David has launched his own podcast. It's called The Main Ingredient with David Nayfeld, and it is awesome. On the show, David welcomes a range of guests, not strictly culinary, to discuss a wide breadth of topics. His first show is with the great San Francisco chef Dominique Crenn. Another is with none other than Gwyneth Paltrow. I've heard a couple of the shows already, and basically, I wanted to turn you all onto it, so I invited David on the show to talk about The Main Ingredient, why he started it, his approach to what he's doing there, and naturally, along with all of that, we get off on a number of tangents along the way. I will link to places where you can find and subscribe to The Main Ingredient with David Nayfeld on the episode page for this show at andrewtalkstochefs.com, as well as on Apple Podcasts, where the links are functional. Before we dive in, I want to say from across the country a hello to Manny J, David's producer and co-host. We decided to not have Manny be a part of this conversation, but it was something we discussed. We decided to just keep it to David, mainly because I thought the familiarity that David and I already have with each other would keep things breezy. But Manny, if you are listening, I hope to welcome you here another time, and I hope that next time I am in the Bay Area that we can all get together and have a meal and hang out a little bit. Also, since we are at the end of the week here, let me please just a few reminders before diving into the show. You can subscribe to Andrew Talks to Chefs wherever you listen to podcasts. It is free on all platforms. You can follow us on Instagram at Chef Podcast is the handle there. We are also on Facebook, where I'm trying to get better about posting new episodes as they drop. And I don't do this often enough, but my latest book, Chefs, Drugs, and Rock and Roll, all about the American chefs of the 1970s and 1980s, is still widely available. And if you like this show, I dare say you might enjoy it. Lastly, please, 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 please rate or review us. If you listen to this show on Apple Podcasts, we appreciate it. And most importantly, it does help people find the show, which is why we ask you to do it. And with that, let's get to my conversation with David Nayfeld, chef and host of The Main Ingredient with David Nayfeld. Here you go. I have one mission today. My mission is to get people to check out The Main Ingredient with David Nayfeld.
We have the same mission, my friend. We have the same mission. I really, first of all, I really appreciate you having me on your show. I would be lying to say that I did not take a certain level of inspiration from your show and the platform that you've built for yourself and your ability to storytell in a nuanced way. And I've enjoyed being on your show. And I think that's what ultimately led me to, to really saying I wanted to do this, right? Because after being on your show a number of times and how good it felt to be able to talk about issues in depth and to be able to have a nuanced conversation. I think that we're living in an age right now where things are kind of, things are all about fitting into a tweet, right? They're all about how much of the comment will someone read? There seems to be a lack of long form storytelling. And anyone who's kind of been paying attention, I've gone to lengths like writing op-eds and, getting them published in the Chronicle and in Business Insider to try and tell more about the industry and shed more light on the industry. And I think, obviously I'm not a writer and that's definitely not my strong suit, but I am a talker, right? And speaking and talking and communicating with people has always been something that's been natural to me. So being on your podcast, ultimately, it kind of informed my decision. So I should be saying thank you, because I think without you and without seeing what you've been able to do and the stories you've been able to tell, I don't think I would have done it myself.
I'm humbled by all that. I appreciate it. As I'm sitting here, I'm like, am I going to leave this in or am I going to cut this out? It feels,
you're leaving it.
I mean, it's very generous of you, but I'm here to talk about you, David Nayfeld. So thank you for all that. Listen, several months ago now, we did a special report during the lockdown. It was the second time you were on my show. We spoke for about an hour. I whittled it down to about 30 minutes. But, in that conversation, I asked you a question. I said, I feel like you're starting to show signs of maybe someone who's going to emerge as a bit of a leader. And you gave me, and I don't mean this in a critical way, but such a conflicted, humble, reluctant to be in that position answer that I didn't even run the question. I took that whole part of the conversation out of the show. But you did write that piece for Business Insider. You have put your voice out there in other ways since then and writing. And now here you are, and you just said, you want to take on issues and you want to be a part of this dialogue that's happening around the industry in more and more complex ways. I selfishly feel a little bit vindicated, and I'm wondering if was I on the money with that? Are you starting to warm up to the notion? Not that you're going to become like the commissioner of cooking, but are you warming up to the notion that maybe you do have a role to play here? You've even in the comments you just made took on the sort of social media culture, even pointing that out. It's so prevalent right now, especially in your industry, takes a little bit of verve. Are you warming at all to this notion of maybe, let's not call it leadership, but maybe trying to drive the conversation a little more?
Yeah, well, I guess if you frame it in that way, I think I certainly feel a responsibility towards pushing the conversation forward in a genuine way that talks about things from more than just one point of view. I think that oftentimes, whether you are looking at a scenario from, the side of where there's winners and losers, or victims and you know, and abusers, whatever you want to, whatever the issue is. You know, I think oftentimes you overlook the fact that there are so many different filters in between that story. And I think that I come from a place where, for whatever reason, I feel the ability to see a lot of people's sides. I don't often just look at a scenario and say, oh, that's completely one-sided, like, you know, open and close case, right? Like, I tend to want to hear everybody's side and believe a certain amount of everyone's story, and recognize that everyone's story is personal to them and is their truth.
Yeah, you give the benefit of the doubt. I can vouch. I've had that with you in some personal exchanges we've had about professional issues.
But as far as being a leader for the industry, you know, I appreciate that. But I think the one thing that I've learned from being a cook all my life is the second that you make some sort of statement about who you are and what you've come to do, is the second that the world will humble you. And the truth is, you know, the one thing that has been true my entire career in the kitchen and continues to be true today is, you know, if you're about something, just be about it. And if you're going to do something, just do it. You know, you don't need to talk about it. You don't need to make a statement as to who you are or what you came to do. You just do that every day, and you do it by action, and then, you know, whoever it is, you know, that prescribes these things, or whoever it is that kind of suggests these things, I think, you know, that's for them to do. That's for, like, you know, the people that discuss these things on the periphery to do. And for me, I don't want to say that I'm any more of a leader than any of the folks out there, whether it's, you know, Daniela Soto Inez or you know, someone like, you know, Tanya Holland or, you know, Dom Kren. Like, I feel like there's a lot of leaders out there, and we're all trying to just do our part. And, you know, I come from a very specific background, and I'm trying to tell stories through that lens.
Okay, fair enough. So let's talk about this show. You know, you shared, well, one of them is now out there in the public. It's your first episode is with Dominique Kren. I'm not quite on the abbreviated first name basis with her. Yeah, I know you call her Dom Kren, as a lot of people do, a lot of colleagues do. And then I've had a sneak preview of your second show. I don't want to mispronounce his last name. Roy?
Schwarzapel. No, it actually means the black apple.
The Dominique episode, to me, am I correct in assuming that that show was a little bit of a microcosm of the breadth of topics that you plan to get into on this podcast? Because, you know, on that episode, you talk about, you know, some general industry stuff. You talk about her biography a little bit and people who mentored her. You get into some hot button topics, like you talk about the whole credit issue that kind of came to a head around, you know, the Jessica Coslow controversy, which seems like a million years ago. You both, I think, very admirably state your own opinion on that. You don't go along with the pack on that subject, which I thought was very much in keeping with what I know of both of you, both you and Dominique. You talk a little bit about what's facing the industry, what a lot of people are referring to as the reset. And you also get very personal with her. It's one of the few places, I think, outside of her own outlets, her own platforms, where I've seen her talk a little bit about, you know, this harrowing encounter she had with breast cancer last year. That's a pretty extensive set of subjects for one interview. And I heard it and I thought, I bet this feels like a little bit of a real statement about what the spectrum of things you're going to get into on the show is. Is that an accurate assumption?
Yeah, you know, I think this is the main thing. You know, I've had some of the guests come on, and some of them ultimately, you know, obviously they'll have, you know, people who cover their marketing or communications or something, and they'll ask for a list of questions beforehand, right? And I'm unable to provide that, because the truth is, what we get into on the show is meant to be a free form conversation based on the things that are important to the guest. But also, you know, I'm a little bit selfish when it comes to the show and what it's supposed to do. And I have my own opinion, right? So there is some editorializing within the podcast that takes us in like in this into this kind of more conversation between friends. And ultimately, I don't know whether you do this on purpose or not, or whether it's just happened to be with you and I, but you and I tend to have that same back and forth on this podcast. And to be honest with you, I really appreciated that, right? Because although, you know, your job as the host is to keep the conversation on point, right? I do think that, that adding my point of view to what we're talking about it is important, right? Because it's ultimately the show is something that I want to say to the world as well as my guests. Now, in terms of, you know, each show and what you can expect, each one is different. And to be honest with you, they tend to have different tones, right? Like this one seemed to have a little bit more of a serious tone throughout, right? I think you'll see that some of the other shows, as they come out, there's a sober sadness in some of the parts of the show. There's a vibrancy and a kind of, you know, debaucherous sense in certain parts of the other show. You know, my co-host and my producer, his name's Manny J. He and I grew up together, and you know, he and I have shared every major experience of our lives together, and that goes from, you know, the most silly and stupid and immature kind of, you know, dick and fart joke era, you know, things that two young boys can go through, to like some serious stuff where we've dealt, you know, with family members passing away and friends of ours passing away and you know, and that creates, I think, a bond and a communication that ends up coming through when we're talking with the guest, right? And whether the guest is coming from, you know, a food background and we're talking to them about the restaurant industry, or we're talking to them about, you know, the episode with Roy gets into mental health, right? And we talk a lot about mental health in that one. And I think that was a very serious conversation to be having that anyone in any industry can appeal to. Everyone can understand those struggles, but I think they're all too real in the arts world. They're all too real in the cooking world. And, you know, we were able to have that conversation within the same breath of also having a complete and utter laughing breakdown about people who eat his panettone the wrong way.
Right. Or security cameras. There's a whole riff on security cameras in restaurants.
So I'm in there and I'm just watching hours and hours and hours of like focused on this.
Are we talking like multiple cameras?
Yeah. Like angles. Like I have, it's like, split.
What was that? Oh, it was a bird. Never mind.
It was like split screen. And when I think I see someone, but it's from the back, I'm like screen grabbing it and sending them like, who's that? Who usually wears that hat? Right. And it's like, I'm sending it to people. And I did this from like 10 p.m. until the next shift started, like, and no sleep.
Oh,
like,
fuck.
And the worst part is I didn't see anything.
You didn't figure it out?
So they all come back and they're like, did you sleep it off, chef? I'm like, no, I didn't sleep it off.
I haven't fucking left.
I haven't left. And they're like, what do you mean you haven't left? We baked. It was done. I was like, yeah, but access to the security cameras was from here.
Like, I had to watch 10 hours.
So they were like, wait, you watched security camera footage? I'm like, I watched security
every
camera.
Fucking second.
They're like, and did you see anything? I was like,
I saw it all.
I saw you
dancing in the walk-in. So,
you know, though, by the way, when every modern restaurant today has, you know, pretty sophisticated security footage, right? Yeah. We have cameras at every angle in this restaurant, and it is so funny to look at people's faces when you say, oh, I just went through all the security footage, and all of a sudden everyone perks up. They're like, what'd you see? You're like, what the fuck did you do? I didn't, but now I'm definitely gonna.
That's the beauty to me of the medium of the podcast, right? It is very much whatever you want it to be. You can editorialize, or you can very much keep it as a a more kind of interview based where you're not adding your perspective as much. And I think I notice when you are more comfortable with your guest, you tend to editorialize. And when you have a more formal relationship, you'll ask and you'll let them answer and you won't necessarily, put that in, but you're more of a journalist than I am. I'm not a journalist. We're peers. And so when these guests come on, I think there is that sense of, part of us are just messing around here. It's like, in a way it's like, we never thought anybody would listen to this to begin with.
Well, I think probably also right now, David, to be honest, I once in a while do a thing on my show, the Shelter on Plus reviews with Allison and Matt Robicelli, where we usually review bad movies about chefs and food. But I've gotten notes from people, and Allison and Matt are both cooks or former cooks, in terms of they both have spent time in professional kitchens. And I've got notes from people where they go, during the lockdown, those episodes reminded me of what it was like, during prep time, which a lot of, even still now, as we sit here, in mid-September, a lot of people in the industry are deprived of that time, that time that I've only really lived, as voyeuristically when I've been trailing in a kitchen or observing, or waiting for someone to finish working so I could interview them. But that whole conversation with Roy, to me, very much, a lot of it to me was, I felt, it is that great fly on the wall of here's two professionals talking the way they might talk if they were, 11 a.m. in the prep kitchen together, to some extent, or after work having a beer.
Well, and I think that is the benefit to having your friends on the pod, right? Like, I think ultimately Manny comes from a music background. I come from a cooking background. Some of the musical guests that we've had, they're people that he's done work with and he's gotten to know, right? And so you have that icebreaker there. I think that, to your point, if people come back and look at the two shows that you and I did together, I felt that the first show, when I listened to it, in a lot of ways, was not my, although I thought it was good, it was a nice way for me to tell a story about myself, it certainly wasn't my favorite show that we've done together, because it wasn't a conversation. You were interviewing us and getting our biography, but like really the my favorite show was when you and I, after you and I had spent some time together, in Philadelphia, hanging out together, eating together, you have that level of intimacy with another person. And that's what makes for real conversation. And I think at the end of the day, what people want to hear is anyone can read a fucking press release, right? Like that is completely benign and so boring.
Yeah. And something, sorry to interrupt, but something you said a minute ago about, giving the questions in advance. I don't give questions in advance either, and it's not, I mean, look, I've done almost 200 shows. I've never sent anyone away angry. But it's because I'm not just working. I do my research, right? But and you do this on your show, David. There is a difference between an interview. Well, first of all, there's a difference between a Q&A and an interview, right? And there is a difference between an interview and a conversation. You just use the word conversation, right? Your show, from what I gather from the first two shows, first two episodes, you're having conversations. You and the guest are on equal footing. It's not this kind of exercise in adoration. It's not, like you said, just a publicity thing. It's an opportunity for listeners to hear fairly, in different ways, as you said, but fairly intimate conversations.
Well, and I mean, this is the main thing, right? I tell people before they get on that the conversation is going to get pretty real. And usually if there's something I really want to talk about with them that I believe they have insight on that can be very personal, I'll ask them beforehand and I'll let them know this is where I'm planning on taking this. And I've had good friends of mine. One thing that I really want to discuss on the podcast is substance abuse. And I haven't got that guest yet. And I asked a good friend of mine, whether they would be willing to go on record to discuss their, struggles with it. And they said, hey, I'm not ready to tell that story yet. And I completely understand that and respect that. And I think the key is here though, is to understand that like I said, I'm not trying to write someone's press release here. It's not about, you know, announcing someone's new book or announcing, you know, we may talk about that if you have that going on. Like, I'm happy to plug whatever, right? Like, we're all trying to get the word out about whatever projects we're doing, right? But at the end of the day, that's not what I'm doing this for. I really want to discuss things that are important to the listeners. And if it's not just about being important, maybe it's just entertaining and fun. Like, I would love to hear, you know, for example, like the story, like you brought up, the story about the security cameras, right? That's not important to anyone. But I'll tell you, every time I listen to it, and I've listened to it like 5 or 6 times now, I still laugh from like my gut when I listen to that. Because how many people work in restaurants who have access to the security cameras have sat there and spent way too much time trying to figure out something that happened that you cannot fix? There's no way for you to fix it. You just have to know for your own edification what happened, right? And I think that's the kind of story that when people hear, they're going to relate to and they're going to understand. And, you know, like the story about Jessica Coslow in, you know, that we talk about on the pod with Dom Krenn is, you know, I think it's important to recognize that I don't think that most chefs believe that she should have got as, you know,
excoriated as she did.
Did she deserve some level of criticism? Yes, of course. Are any of us perfect? No, absolutely not. Did she deserve to get her business eviscerated? I don't think so. And I think there's a lot of chefs that I've spoken to that don't think so either. And I think the key to remember here is nuanced conversation. Right? We're living in a world where everything is about, whoa, are you a Trump supporter or are you a Biden supporter? And if you're this, you're all in, you're all 100% one side. And the truth is that the majority of us who don't take our cues or find out how to feel on Twitter live somewhere in between. We have this kind of, you know, back and forth within ourselves, and we have trouble with an ideology that tells us that the only way for you to live is to agree with 100% of whatever side is asking for your commitment level. And to me, I just don't believe in living my life that way. I am more than happy to tell people when they're wrong about something, and my good friends, and I'm happy to admit that they're wrong and tell them they're wrong and still be their friend and support them and still, you know, have their back. But I'm also willing to tell people that I'm not friends with, or I didn't vote for, that I didn't agree with, or that, you know, that we don't have a relationship. I'm also willing to tell them that they did something right and that good on them for like making the right move. And, you know, I think there is some political talk in some of the pods, and we break down a lot of different ideologies and a lot of different views, whether it's about Second Amendment, First Amendment, whether, you know, rights to protest versus rights to, you know, loot. All that stuff comes up in the pod. And I think the key to remember here is that the majority of us, like I said, the majority of us don't have to go to Twitter to find out how we feel about something. We know how we feel about it, and it's usually somewhere in the middle. It's conflicted. It's not 100% sorted out. And it only gets kind of galvanized to this point of being like, you know, I would call it radicalized when a group of people look and say, oh, you can't think that, or you can't say that. You can't feel this way. You can't feel conflicted about this. It's all right or it's all wrong. And that's what I think ends up pushing people off to one side and makes them say, well, if that's the case, I'm going to the side that you're not on, because you're the one who makes me feel bad about being myself, right? And I think that that's something we really need to address as a society at large, is like we do live in this world of cancel culture. We do live in this world of, you know, you're either right or you're wrong. We do live in this world of if you have got basically, proven to do something that is below utter virtue, right? Like not completely virtuous, then you are expected to like go away.
Cease to exist. Yeah.
Cease to exist. And I just don't find that to be a realistic way of living, right?
Well, it is right now though. I mean, people are getting, you know, they're getting zapped like the like in War of the Worlds, you know? Like they're just like, boom, you're turned into dust, you know? I mean, it does happen. I mean, that it is, that is the culture at the moment. I do think, you know, it is cyclical, and I do think there is a bit of pushback now. Well, let's move on for a minute because we only have so much time. Tell me about Manny. Tell me about your co-host and your producer. I didn't know this. You just said he was your best buddy growing up. He's in the music realm, but tell me a little more about him and how do you guys work together on the show?
Manny and I have known each other since the second grade, and he and I have always just been very close, you know, to the point where I've been very close with his family, his brothers, his mom and his dad. And he's been the same way at our house, you know, like growing up, he was always I always made fun of him and said that he was our IT guy. Right. When he came over, because no matter what happened, my mom and dad would always find a way to ask him to fix the Wi-Fi or the internet. That he would come in and my family, for some reason, did not know how to. We were not very tech savvy. And it's very funny. Like every time he came over, they were like, hey, Manny, can you fix the Wi-Fi or can you fix this little computer issue I'm having? And I have no idea. Manny has just been one of those guys who, in terms of technology, he's just understood it before any of us, right? Like he was the guy that knew how to rip a CD before anybody else. He was the guy that knew how to, you know, create like a little edited video before anyone else. And to be honest with you, like it probably should have been like a foreshadower that would be kind of a direction that he would go in. After, you know, we got out of high school, he really fell in love. Well, he'd always been in love with music, but he fell in love with the idea of making music and engineering music. He traveled the world with Teddy Riley, who, you know, for those, if I'm dating myself, for those of you guys who don't know who Teddy Riley is, you should definitely go study up. But obviously, like anyone who knows who Blackstreet is, you know, kind of some responsible for some of the biggest R&B hits ever. You know, he worked with people like Tyrese. He worked with a significant amount of really, really top level musical artists. He traveled the world with them and, you know, decided to come back to the Bay Area. You know, I came back to the Bay Area after traveling the world cooking. And, you know, the funny thing is about our relationship, and Manny alludes to this in the trailer, which is, you know, it's like a video game. You put the controller down, you play, you press pause, and then you come back to it whenever you want, and you press pause, and you're right back where it started. And that's always been our friendship. It's always been, there's never been this moment of like, oh, well, I can't believe so much time has passed, and like now there's animosity. It's like, no, like the same jokes are real. The same feeling is real. Like the same love, the same friendship, right? Like the same admiration for each other. And you know, what I also like about me and Manny is he and I on certain issues could not be further apart in terms of ideology or thinking, right? But what I love about him and I think makes us really compatible friends is neither one of us is in the business of like defriending people when you disagree with them. Neither one of us is in the business of, you know, chastising people or making them feel subhuman because you don't agree with them. We love to argue, we love to debate, we love to, you know, rib each other and send like, you know, certain articles that will disprove the other person's like last statement. But at the end of the day, there's nothing but love and respect for each other, because when you come from a place where he and I grew up, you know, like our friendship was forged in, you know, in the fire, right? Like in a lot of ways, the way we grew up, you know, is like there was an element of roughness around us constantly that we had needed to have each other's back in a real way. And so, you know, something that is superficial, something that is trite is never going to come in between of us and the way we, you know, the way we interact together. But I think it makes for a really entertaining conversation, right? And when you add a third party to our conversation, that person may align more with Manny's point of view, or they may align more with mine, or frankly, Manny and I may align more. And I really like the dynamic of three people on the phone. I think it's interesting the fact that I'm not from a musical background, he's not from a cooking background. So you always have someone, in the conversation who's a novice. You always have someone who can bring it back a little bit and not make it so inside baseball.
Yeah, he's the surrogate for non-industry listeners, right? Like you guys do, the format is you guys set up the guests and he asks questions like when you talk about Dominique. He's like, well, you know, what's the difference between Michelin stars and like, you know, the review you get from the Chronicle?
So Michelin stars is like, where does that compare to like in my world, that would be like a Grammy or, you know.
So, you know, the way I would say is like the Grammys is more for us, especially American chefs, the James Beard Awards. And, okay. You know, they have like a long list and then a short list.
Right. Or like an award, maybe even an Oscar.
Right. And well, in the same sense that like that's more like the James Beard Awards, right? You have a long list and then a short list, and then there's this night where everybody wins these things.
And that's strictly like a United States thing.
Yeah, the James Beard is a United States thing. Whereas, you know, Michelin is more like, imagine, you know, I'm assuming it's either the Rolling Stones or Source Magazine or Vibe or whatever, where they will give you, you know, the best rating possible on an album. Right, they're talking in that same way about a restaurant. So one and Michelin is a tire company, right?
Right.
And you know they kind of created this rating system to get people to drive around more after, you know, one of the world wars. And so the idea was that, you know, one star was if you're in that area, in that vicinity,
drop by.
Now every chef, even not just in the Bay Area, every chef in the world or in the United States for sure knows the answer to that question. But for people who find your show who don't know that, he's kind of a surrogate for those people, right? He's asking those questions. He helps you bring a more of a universality to what's about to go down.
Right, totally. And you know, and I think that the main thing to remember is that this show is not just all about the food industry, right? This show, the way we the way we kind of describe it is it's the crossroads of, you know, art, commerce. And, you know, in society, right? Like, you know, when those things kind of come together, when your art form is your form of income and how that plays into, you know, the social fabric of where you live. And, you know, I think that it's interesting how much the world has started to have an impact on the arts in terms of just their conversations around it. Like people who don't actually even participate in creating the art, right? Like, and, you know, one thing, you know, I told you before, I want to have you on the show, you know, hopefully very soon. And, you know, I'd like to discuss.
I can't wait.
Well, and I'd like to discuss, you know, food media, right? Like, and I think that's something that yeah. needs to get discussed because we are in a world where, you know, there is an element of people who talk about people who are the ones doing things, right? And they yes. have shaped the narrative of our industry in a lot of ways, whether it's reasonable or unreasonable. And I think that there's both, right? Sometimes someone is writing something or saying something or remarking upon something and they're spot on, right? Like, and there's no way to get around it. And sometimes they lack complete context. And it's so obvious when they do that because they're saying something in such a like total way that they are so sure that this is the only way it happens that you can tell that they've never actually lived or experienced the truth of the matter. And I think where we've gotten to is you have people who are pundits and then you have people who are truly appreciators or they want to learn about something. I think, you know, the one thing that I've always appreciated about you and your show, you know, and getting back to flattery just a little bit more, the one thing that I really appreciate about you and your show is that you are unafraid to go into a situation without your mind made up and to be convinced of something, right? And that can sometimes be a very uncomfortable place for people to be, right? Like a lot of people think that they need to make up their mind about something right away. And I think you've always expressed this level of genuine curiosity. And you're not new to our field. You know, you've been.
Well, that's putting it mildly.
Right. Well, and you know, like.
I'm not new to many things at this point, Dave.
Well, but that's the thing, right? Like you have people who have been, whether they're writing about our field or whether they've been in our field for 6 years. And they believe that 6 years is somehow like representative of a lifetime.
Well, or of the entire history of the culinary profession.
Right, and that everything is
and restaurant and restaurant culture.
Totally. And that 100% of everything is in their sight line, right? Like, and that and they are 100% in tune with everything that's going on. Totally. And what I've always appreciated about your the way you approach things is the fact that you approach them with a genuine curiosity. And I think that that's what makes our show, I'm hoping that's what will make our show good as well, that Manny and I are both genuinely curious. I think we're both willing to have our minds changed, right? Like, you know, there is that kind of, I think it's a tech cliche at this point, which is like strong opinions held loosely or some nonsense like that. But I think that that's a really good way to live. I do think you should have opinions about things, but don't hold on to them so tightly and let people give people an opportunity to change your mind.
Thanks again for the kind words. I'm going to try to cut a lot of them out. But when I come on your show, you can go to town.
You got it.
Something that really struck me, David, is you're a Caucasian. This show has a real like hip hop vibe to it. I mean, the music, you do something I want to talk about in a second, which is the way you bring the music in during the show. I've not heard that elsewhere. You probably aren't the first people to ever do that on a show, but I got to tell you, I love it. And in all honesty, I may at some point find a way to steal it because I think it's so cool.
I hope you do. I hope you do.
That was a surprise to me when I came to the show. Was that a no-brainer? Did that happen organically? Was that something that you and Manny had to talk about? Or was that kind of, it's weird to use the word vision about a podcast, but was that like when you decided you wanted to do a show, did you want it to have that vibe to it? Because it really has it, I think, very strongly. And I mean, I love it. I mean, I just love it.
Well, listen, I mean, I appreciate it. And to use something that Manny has said to me my entire life, he doesn't consider me white. He considers me clear. No, yeah, listen, I mean, you know, I think the thing is, growing up in the Bay Area, being born and raised here, hip hop has been a elemental part of our upbringing. You know, the first concert I ever saw, I was 13 years old, was at the Fillmore. I saw Cypress Hill. Another concert was, you know, when I was, I think I was 14, I went to go see the Alcoholics, Tribe Called Quest, and De La Soul. You know, that is a part of our DNA here, right, in the Bay. And, you know, also being kids of the 90s, right, like our life is a soundtrack. That's the way everything was in a Walkman. Everything was walking around, having, you know, headphones on. And I think we were probably one of the first generations to be able to walk around constantly with a Walkman. We never had a time where you didn't have, music always with you, right? And Walkmans gave way to, you know, the little CD players. I forgot what those were called. And then, you know, and then ultimately you started to get MP3 players and all that stuff. So never was there a time within our life that music wasn't constantly available. And then that leads up to the second that you're 16. And growing up here in the Bay Area, when you're 16, if you get a car, I'll tell you, you will take every extra cent you have and you'll probably spend less on whatever car you get just so you can get a sound system in there. And everything was about, you know, how big your amp was and how much bass you can get in there. And that was a part of the culture for us. And so music, hip hop, and it wasn't just hip hop, right? Like for us, there was hip hop, there was grunge, there was punk, all that stuff. And then that, you know, as I matured, that, you know, laid way to kind of, you know, jazz, blues, kind of, you know, more classic rock, all that kind of stuff became, you know, something that I had a love affair with. Manny obviously went into music. I didn't have any musical talent, but music has always played a big role in my life and how I find and derive inspiration. And, you know, once again, also being the brother of somebody who's in entertainment, right? Like everything was about a montage, right? Like, and it, a montage in a movie told you how to feel about something, right? And that's what I love about adding music to this, because I some people could say that it's a cheap way of doing it. I think that it just adds a layer of texture to it, right? Like, I think it's experiential. You know, it's not about, you know, to me, I would love for you to listen to this podcast and experience the way we're feeling in that moment, right? When I was having the discussion with Dawn Craig, you know, about her battle with cancer and then just waking up some days and like, you know, everyone saying, oh, look at Dawn Craig. She's so tough. She's so like, she's a go-getter. Like she's just fighting the good fight. So some days she was waking up and she's like, oh, I don't want to be that person. I feel like shit today. I feel beat up. I feel terrible. And I want to tell the world that it's okay to feel like that too. It's okay to feel like that. And then, you know, to me, you know, to add some texture to that, to add a little bit of stickiness to that, so you understand really how it felt to be in the room with her discussing that. I the music feels like a no-brainer for me and Manny.
How has that affected you as an artist? And how do you view your place in the industry differently now?
Well, first of all, as affecting me as an artist, I think I created more in that moment of struggle than I'd ever done it. So this is great. I was vocal, and the reason why I was vocal because I felt that a lot of women out there were going and are gonna go to the same thing, and there's a stigma about cancer that needs to be kind of clean up, you know, and making sure that they understood that they were not alone. And it's a difficult journey, but yet it's also an inspiring journey that could also allow us to learn more about ourselves. And if we do the right thing, we can get out of it.
But as you guys hear more and more episodes, like, for example, we talk about we have a Bay Area legend, Big Von, who's been on the radio since Manny and I were little kids, right? Like, and we used to listen to him on the radio and record, like hit the record button on the cassette tapes to like record a whole DJ set, right? And like he's on the show, and we talk about kind of how the Bay Area has its own culture, right? And it's a kind of beyond, in a lot of ways, it's beyond race here for a lot of people. I'm not saying it is for everybody, but when we were growing up, right, like it was much more about class, right? And there wasn't a thing where if you were poor, you got to live with all the poor white people. No, like if you were poor, poor white, poor Mexican, poor Chinese, Vietnamese, Afghan, you know, like when my cousin came here, he came here as a Russian refugee. He lived in the same building with Afghan refugees. And this was like barely a couple of years, if not like months, after the Afghan-Russian war, and they became the best of friends, right? Because that was the class that we were in. We were all in the same like place growing up, and we all were the same together. We were all friends, and we celebrated each other's differences because we were never told that each other's differences were less than or bad. But also, there wasn't this massive group of our own people, right? If you wanted to have any friends at all, you better be friends with Black people, Mexican people, Samoan people, Afghan people, the whole thing. Because it was a big mix for us. And I don't, by the way, I want to be very careful in saying, like, I'm in no way downplaying the role of race relations in other people's lives. I'm just saying that for us, if you ask the majority of people that grew up with us, we had a different view of it. And that's why I like, you know, when you hear people on our show, you know, they do come from every background and every class level, and you'll be able to see that.
I love it. I love that whole dynamic of the show. And I have to tell you, the thing with the music that, you know, I don't know, for me as someone, you know, who does, you know, every day I think about podcasting, right? Every day. And I was in my car, and the first time you did that with Dominique, where the music comes in under her talking, it was exhilarating to me. It was as a listening experience, which I think a lot of people don't get this, right? They think it's just enough to hang out and record it and throw it up on the air. But as a listening experience, that music added so much. It added so much. I have to say, as a future guest, I'm a little worried because it's all very sexy music. And I don't know. Like, I think you may have to like put like, I don't know who you're going to layer in under me, like Billy Joel. Like, I don't know what's going to make sense under my voice, but I don't know. I may break the template. I don't know.
No, but I'll tell you the process. The funny thing is Manny and I will sit there and we will listen to it with like really like big headphones, like the type that are noise canceling. So you're really in the conversation. A lot of times I'll close my eyes
or I'll sit there in a dark room and I'll just stare at the wall, or like, you know, I'll stare at something that's completely allows me to just engage with the conversation again and listen to it. And as we're going, I'll have my phone out and I'll start finding songs that, you know, I feel like feel right in that moment. And sometimes I'll stop the podcast and I'll play the song to see if it connects in that emotional way. Right. And like I said, you know, it goes back to being a kid of the 90s and 80s, by the way. Right. Like when you talk about the best montages in history, right, like they're in the 80s. And so that's, I think, very much embedded in how we like to view things and what we miss. And it's nostalgic. So I have no doubt that we are going to find something very appropriately sexy for you when you're on the show.
I appreciate your confidence. I'm a little worried. I'm a little worried. It's going to be like Hanson, you know. I don't know what it's going to be, but I'm a little worried about what you're going to end up putting that under, you know, what sounds right with my voice. So Dominique's the first guest. Roy Schwarzappel.
Roy is going to be the third guest.
Oh, he's the third guest.
He's the third guest. Our second guest is going to be Adrian Marcel. Adrian Marcel is a Bay Area artist who came up under Raphael Sadiq, who's a platinum level recording artist. He's Oakland, son of Oakland, born and raised. He's got a really, really fantastic following here. And his podcast, I think, is exhilarating. And he was not actually recorded second. We recorded Roy second, but we felt like it was important because in the Adrian Marcel podcast, we discussed a lot of things that had to do with a lot of the civil unrest that was going on today. And we wanted to put that out while it was still relevant. So I think that really is going to speak in a large way to, you know, what the Bay Area's role is in everything that's happening, and the fact that, you know, one way is not like it's not like a one size fits all kind of mentality. You know, Adrian Marcel kind of dives in a little bit to how he views his role in the world with, you know, whether it's because of Black Lives Matter or with protesting, or how his views on looting. Obviously, being a son of Oakland, he knows the type of pain that we all go through when we see one of our brothers and sisters get murdered senselessly by by police or by anyone else. But I think we're also a place where we grew up in a place of small businesses. A lot of our parents are small business owners. A lot of us became small business owners. So we see how detrimental it is when when a business that's in our community gets defiled or gets kind of ruined because people are, in our view, pointing their frustration and their anger, their righteous anger, in the wrong direction, though. You know, and I think we get into that, and I think it's important to get that experience from someone like Adrian Marcel and from, you know, the words of someone like Big Von, who, you know, I feel like they hold credibility in the community.
I think it's smart. I also think it's very shrewd to have a non-culinary person, you know, right out of the gate, you know, to establish, again, the breadth of what you're trying to do. You know, David, one of the things I really respect about you, whether it is on Twitter, whether it's in conversations we've had, whether it's in some of the conversations you've already had on the show, is that you are fearless in, you know, being willing to state your opinion. I have to say, I try always to have that strength. I don't always have it. I do have a fear, if I'm being honest. I do have a fear, and sometimes it can be very intense and almost paralyzing. And I've talked to other, I don't even know if I guess I'm a public figure at this point in my life, but I've spoken to other writers, broadcasters, whatever, about this. It's not an uncommon thing right now. I mean, people are really terrified that you're going to put one foot wrong and, you know, you're going to get disappeared, you know, as they say in the mob. But you, I think, are very, you know, you're not just saying this in this interview. This, you do walk the walk, you know, you know, as Sosa says to Tony Montana in Scarface, there's no lying in you, you know. I really respect it, and it's already apparent in the show. So really quickly, just give us a couple of highlights of who else you have coming up in your first season.
So we have Tanya Holland, who is a fantastic chef here in the Bay Area. Right now, she's got a restaurant called Brown Sugar Kitchen, which is in Oakland. We have obviously, you know, the forever affable, amazing Gwyneth Paltrow, who, you know, she and I was very fortunate to develop a relationship with her over the past couple of years, you know, because she liked the restaurant a lot and she liked our food a lot. And she's just always been super generous to us in the sense of giving us access and helping us get the word out about what we do. We have Big Von, like I said, which is, you know, a local DJ here and personality and also, you know, musical kind of professional. And, you know, I think that his contribution to the show is important because he, in a lot of ways, embodies like a historic element to the Bay Area. You know, he's been working in the culture, whether it's, you know, hip hop or whether it's music or whether it's just, you know, the Bay Area at large. And he's seen everything from before the first dot-com bubble to dot-com bubble to now like tech and everything, and how San Francisco and how the Bay Area to a greater extent has changed from being this working class blue collar place. And it still is that, but just it's been pushed out further, right, to the other parts of the Bay Area, and San Francisco has stopped kind of resembling that. And I think having someone who has that historical context on is important. You know, and we have a lot of people in the pipeline coming up. We have a few different people that we want to talk to. One thing I think that I've talked about a number of times on the show is mental health. And I want to continue to have that be a conversation so we can destigmatize it. We can destigmatize the idea of people, you know, taking care of their mental health and not this feeling of, oh, if you had to go see someone like a therapist or a psychologist, that in some way means that you're either damaged or you're crazy or you're this or you're that. Like, you know, in a lot of ways, I view it as the same way as you're brushing your teeth or you're flossing or you're getting a cleaning. You know, it's maintenance, right? Like you, in a lot of ways, you are seeing someone because you are trying to be your best version of yourself, right? And and everyone starts from a different place. Some people start in a place where they're more challenged or less challenged with that, right? And so I think, you know, I think for me, that's been one of the major highlights is getting to talk about that with a number of different people from a number of different angles. And I hope that, you know, that helps people both in our industry and other industries say, you know, yeah, I need to focus on my mental health, right? My mental health is as important, if not more important, than my physical health. And I'm going to make a point to prioritize it.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, David, for what it's worth, I'm not a chef. And I'm not, you know, as I say, I'm not in your field. I have to sometimes be reminded of that. But I've never have been really, except, you know, when I was a busboy when I was 15. You know, I suffer, you know, I've been diagnosed with OCD and ADD. I take medication. I don't relish talking about it. But I'm happy, you know, when I do come on, if you want, we'll talk about that too. My goal when I finally come on your show is going to be complete, Neufeld level honesty. So,
I'm honored, man. This is exciting.
No holds barred. So if you want to get into all that when I come on, I'm happy to talk about it. Cause I remember very vividly sitting at, you know, I used to see a therapist and I remember very vividly the day, you know, when she said to me, you know, I think there may be something, you know, biologically, chemically, whatever word you want to use, you know, off with you. I think this may go beyond therapy. I think you may need to have some medication. You know, and it was a terribly upsetting thing for me, you know, to think that something was, you know, wrong with my mind, you know, and I agree with everything you just said, but it's not an easy thing for a lot of people, me included, to accept, right? Because you don't think of your brain as an organ the way you think of your heart or your liver, you know? You know, but it is just another part of your anatomy, although it's hard to fathom that. It really is, you know, what does Matthew McConaughey say in True Detective? It's not part of the programming.
I'm looking forward to people hearing more about that and seeing, by the way, some of the people that they admire talking about it and talking about their struggles with it and talking about their successes with it. And understanding that, you know, it's not about winning or losing. It's just, it is a path, right? Some days are harder than others. Some days are easier than others, right? And it's all about, hey, today I felt like maybe I wasn't my best self. You know, tomorrow I can try again. And, you know, and that goes in line with what we talked about before, which is like, it's not about being perfect, right? It's just about, having the right mindset, having good intentions. And when you falter, apologizing or recognizing that and making good on the next attempt.
Well, it's also very often, and I want to be clear before I say this, having just said what I said or what I shared, I'm not applying this to myself, but it very often is the flip side of the genius coin, right? I mean, there are so many people, we don't have to name them right now, but there are people we've lost in the last 5-10 years who were hugely successful, some of them iconic, you know, who it turns out were suffering with these problems. You know, you go back in history, you know, Abraham Lincoln, you know, was depressed. You know, it very often goes hand in hand with a certain degree of creativity, a certain degree of ambition, a certain degree of perfectionism, a certain degree of a lot of things that we hold to be very admirable often goes hand. This is often the price of that for whatever reason. You know, those things are often intertwined. You know, I think that's something for people to also recognize. You know, there've been a number of people on my show, you know, who have opened up a little about this stuff. And a lot of them are people who from the outside seem, you know, to have perfect lives. You know, they're successful, they have families and people who love them, but you know, the internal struggle can still be there. So I agree with you. I think that's a huge topic. Tell people where they can listen. Cause you're not on every platform yet. What are the places where people can find your show?
You know, we are distributing through Anchor. We're on Spotify. We're on iTunes. We're on Stitcher. We're on all those. Obviously, it takes a little bit of time for those to upload, but it gets up there, you know, pretty immediately, especially to like, you know, Spotify and Anchor. But, you know, eventually we'll be everywhere where you listen to your podcast. But if you are inclined to, I'm going to take a note out of your book, and I hope that when you listen to it, especially on iTunes, that you rate it 5 stars and you leave a review and you tell your friends how much you loved it. Even if you have to lie, it's okay to lie to your friends sometimes.
I would encourage everyone to do that too. And I will, of course, link to as many places as I can to help you find The Main Ingredient with David Nayfeld on the episode page for this show at Andrew Talks to Chefs and also at Apple Podcasts where the links are functional. David, I appreciate you coming on. I'm very happy. You know, usually when someone announces a podcast, it just annoys me because I think a lot of people do it so either they do it so casually that I feel, I'm sorry, this is the one thing I'm arrogant about. Well, I'm arrogant about other things, but this is the one thing I admit to being arrogant about. You know, it's either so casual that it's just cluttering up, you know, the field, or it's celebrities who are just cashing in but aren't really putting very much time into it. I do, you know, from the first interview you and I did and having gotten to know you over the last, what now, maybe 2 years.
Right.
I do think your voice is important. I do appreciate, as someone who cares about your industry, the contributions you're making. And I, you know, I'm just thrilled that you've jumped in, and I encourage, you know, I guess technically we're competitors, but I encourage everybody. If you like this show, I know that you will love David's new show. I've heard 2 episodes from start to finish, and I just think it's awesome. So congratulations on Liftoff, and I hope this helps. I hope this helps the cause.
Thank you, my brother. I appreciate you.
And And that's our show for today. Again, please check out and subscribe to The Main Ingredient with David Nayfeld. And if you are in San Francisco or close to it, please support Kefiko Restaurant. As all restaurants can, they really could use it right now. As always, our thanks to After School Special for our music. Please check out their album, Double Barrel Single Entendre, on iTunes. And thanks to you for listening, and we will see you back here next week with another episode of Andrew Talks to Chefs.